This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Opinion Booth and, of course, myself, Sonia Booth. Today is Mandela Day and Utata Madiba would have celebrated his 99th birthday. He is an icon and he is known the world over as the epitome of Ubuntu, Botho, humanity. It is for this reason that I decided on today's topic. I knew from the get-go that getting this inspirational couple into the studio would be near impossible. Dr. Judy Dlamini is preparing for her exams tomorrow. Yes, you are never too old to learn. This is why I used her as an example in my book titled How to Reinvent Yourself and Stay Relevant. And that this season, Asana was only available in the afternoon, and this is when I wished I had an afternoon slot. I guess this is my way of expressing the difficulty of getting someone to come into the studio at this awkward hour. I say awkward because you would have started at the office in the morning and then you would have had to break up your day to come here into the studio. And then more than likely you would have to go back to the office because my show finishes at 12. It messes up with your normal routine per se. But anyway, back to Dr. Judy and Ntate Sizwe. Dr. Judy is the founder and executive chairman of the Mbekane Group, a qualified doctor, has an MBA, having majored in corporate finance, holds a doctorate in business leadership. She and her husband are the founders and trustees of Mkiwa Trust, a family public benefit organization with a focus in rural development and education. Ntate Sizwe is a qualified chartered accountant, and he serves as chairman on various foundations and trusts. He is the founder and chairman of the National Education Collaboration Trust and also chairman of the NESFAS. He is now a social entrepreneur who recently founded Sifiso Learning Group, which is establishing private schools in South Africa, and is also involved in EdTech, academic publishing, and real estate. Moreover, Ntate Sizwe has been conferred with honorary doctorates by the University of Fort Hare, the Durban University of Technology, the University of Johannesburg, and Walter Sisulu University. As you can tell from their profiles, they have pretty hectic schedules and they show no signs of slowing down anytime soon. It is for this reason that I had to explore Plan B. I tried to get them into the studio, but as I said, Plan B had to happen. Take a listen at our interview and allow their wisdom to rub off on you.
Dr. Judy, how can you compare your generation to the so-called born-free's millennials, for example? Are they bolder, more outspoken, more self-expressive?
Born-free's have different challenges. One of our main challenges was apartheid. They might be free politically, but economically we're not free. And they have challenges of HIV/AIDS, which baby boomers didn't experience as a youth, and they have so many other challenges. The drug issue is such a problem. During our days, it was almost darker, the only drug that was there, and now there are so many different drugs that they actually are exposed to. So they are bolder, yes, they are more outspoken, more self-expressive, and they actually, especially those that come from really impoverished parts of the country, the challenge is just getting quality education at all levels, especially access to tertiary education, which is actually quite important for all our youth, especially if we are to be the country that would love to be, an innovative country and innovative continent.
Was there ever a time when you thought motherhood is tough? What did I get myself into? Were there times when you doubted your parenting skills?
Of all the things that I've had to do as a person, there is nothing that's more important than being a mother. If I had to choose just one thing, that I would ask God to give me, it would be the privilege of being a mother. It's the most fulfilling thing. There is no template. There is no school where you are taught how to be a mother. But it comes intuitively. It's a natural instinct that each one of us has, I believe. And yeah, it's just the best thing, the most fulfilling thing of all the things that I've ever had to do.
You are actively involved with Take a Girl Child to Work initiative. Have you ever encountered a girl that reminds you of you at that age?
I'm quite passionate about the Take a Girl Child to Work, but I think we should do as much for boys as we do for girls, because we're starting to see some misalignment in terms of the passion for education when it comes to boys and girls. If you just look at the undergrads and the junior and the honors degrees, 60% of those that qualify are girls. I'm happy that girls are actually showing up and applying themselves, but it's important that boys actually are also encouraged. So I'm an advocate that we actually need to Take a Girl Child to Work as much as we need a Take a Boy Child to Work initiative.
What is the title of the book you would pass on to your mentee, and why?
I recently published a book called Equal But Different, which was a conversion of my thesis, my doctoral thesis, that looked at the intersection of race, gender, and social class. And it was actually quite a beautiful journey, the interviews that I conducted. A total of 20 women leaders from South Africa, the U.S., and also Canada, and across race, across social class, across different industries in the economy. And for the book, I also interviewed two leaders. One is the deputy president of the country. And, I actually would pass that book on, because the sole objective of writing that book was to just share the experiences that I came across, share the life journeys of those that have succeeded, and I truly believe that it will serve the purpose to inform, to mentor, to inspire both men and women, and people at different levels and leaders in different parts or sectors of society.
You wrote a book on women leaders and leadership. Do you foresee a future where women earn the same as men? I ask this because women earn 27% less than men for the same job.
Each one of us has a responsibility to ensure that there is equality in our lifetime. And by equality, I mean equality amongst between men and women, equality regardless of the social class, equality across race, and different sexual orientation, different abilities. So it's actually important if we are to close the gap between the haves and the have-nots, and if we are to perform at our optimum as countries, it's important that there is equality. It's important that the playing field is leveled. So, yeah, it's each and everyone's responsibility, wherever you are, with whatever power or control you have, that you ensure that we do reach equality.
Is there a person that you can look at and say, because of you, my life is better?
Parents meant a lot to me. Everything I am because of the impact they had in my life, and the patience, the love, and the investment they made in me. I'm grateful to my husband, who's actually been my friend, childhood friend, my mentor, and just my pillar of strength. My daughter, my beautiful daughter, whose work ethic, who's just epic, and a value system as a person I respect, and I rely on her so much to just tell me the truth. Tell me the way it is, and my late son, who was also one of my pillars. So my immediate family is my world, quite frankly.
What is your biggest fear?
I don't look at life in terms of fears. I look at life every day as a gift, and you just do your best and pray that your best is good enough. So I refuse to be ruled by fear. Some of my worst fears have come true, so it's better that I didn't have them in the first place, because then I would have wasted a lot of time fearing something that I couldn't control. So yeah, every day is just a gift from God, so that's what matters to me.
What does contentment mean to you?
Contentment, success, you know, my definition of success has changed over the years, and what I have to say today might be different 10 years from now. What I feel now is that you consider yourself successful if you believe that you are living your purpose, and I would have had a different answer 10, 20 years ago. I would have thought of financial independence as success, being happy, but today I believe it's living your purpose, where you believe you actually doing the best you could for yourself, you're doing the best you could for your family, and you're going beyond your family, your extended family, but to communities that need your assistance, whether it's financial, whether it's advice, whatever it is, with whatever you have, you feel that you are reaching out. So yeah, success for me is believing that you are living the purpose you were placed on earth to live.
In my opinion, there is no better legacy than building schools. Please tell me about the moment when you thought, that's it, Future Nation Schools has to come to fruition yesterday.
In my view, your legacy is the lives you touch every day. It doesn't have to be something huge that people look at and say, that is what she or he did. But it's just each life that you touch every day, every positive impact that you have. It might be just advice to someone, or someone just watching your life and believing that it can be done, whatever it is that they aspire to do, and they believe that you've done it well. So to me, that is your legacy. The education that my family and I actually started, and my husband is leading the Sufiso Learning Group and Future Nation Schools, is only one way of making a difference to the generations that will come after us, and also just having a contribution to quality education that is relevant, quality education that will actually make us innovative as Africans in the continent.
What is the one thing you've said to yourself, I cannot die before achieving this, or I cannot die before experiencing this?
I take every day at a time. I've had many dreams. I started dreaming from the age of 4, and I think as long as you live, you actually, when you achieve the dream, you actually have another dream, and when you achieve that, you then look for something else, and so it goes on. So if I didn't wake up tomorrow, I'd just be happy that God gave me the life that He did, and the family that He gave me. So yeah, I don't have regrets, and not because everything has been perfect. I've had a lot of challenges, I've made mistakes, but I'm comfortable with the fact that it was meant to be, and every day is a gift.
What would you like written on your tombstone?
What would I like written on my tombstone? That I was true to myself and to those that I loved and those that loved me back. I always tried my best, and I live my life with integrity, and for me, that's the most important thing.
What is your favorite Madiba quote?
It's difficult to think of Utatu Madiba or Nelson Mandela without thinking of Umamo Wini Madikizela Mandela. The pain that she went through all her life, and the way she kept the Mandela name alive, the way she actually kept the struggle and ensured that she was the social worker that she was, not only by qualification, but at heart. There are certain, there are two quotations from Umamo Winnie that always just put a perspective to what she has gone through and what she meant to the Mandela name and to the country. One of them is, I quote, "I'm the product of the masses of my country and the product of my enemy," end quote. The other one, which always leaves me wounded, if you like, because it's painful fact, but this is what she had to go through. The quote goes, open quote, "The years of imprisonment hardened me. Perhaps if you have been given a moment to hold back and wait for the next blow, your emotions wouldn't be blunted as they have been in my case. When it happens every day of your life, when that pain becomes a way of life, I no longer have the emotion of fear. There is no longer anything I can fear. There is nothing the government has not done to me. There isn't any pain I haven't known," end quote. So in my view, as we celebrate our giant, Tatu Nelson Mandela, let us not forget our other giant, Umama Winnie Mandela. She went through a lot for the liberation of this country, and we need to celebrate her.
Wisdom, indeed, and I agree with Dr. Judy. You know, often we celebrate Utata Madiba, easily forgetting the efforts and what Mama Madikizela Mandela also had to endure. An incredible woman, indeed. Next up, you will hear my conversation with Ntate Sizwe.
Ntate Sizwe Masana, how can you compare your generation to the so-called bond-free's millennials? For example, are they bolder, more outspoken, more self-expressive?
You ask a very interesting question, how the bond-free's or millennials are different, or how they compare, for instance, to the baby boomer generation, which I belong to. The baby boomer generation, you know, was a generation which worked really hard, especially, you know, post-war from the 1950s thereafter. And we were a generation that typically stuck to one job. So a lot of people would have worked in one industry from the time that they finished school or university until they retire. Which is very different from the current generation, where you see a lot of young people who are the so-called slash generation. In other words, someone may be working in an office, maybe in a finance department, but after hours, where they're involved in social media, they may be a DJ, they may be involved in the arts and so on. So it's an environment which is very different today, obviously influenced very largely by technology and social media, but at the same time, it is an...
Was there ever a time when you thought fatherhood is tough? What did I get myself into? Were there times when you doubted your parenting skills?
As a father, you know, were there times when I had doubted or had any doubts about my parenting skills? I've always tried to be the best father that I could be to my children. You know, at the moment I have two young daughters who are both professionals, and our late son who departed about 5 years ago. So, you know, I've always tried to make sure that, you know, I was the best father that I could be by just providing them guidance, being friends to my children, being open about discussions and conversations about life generally, was providing guidance. But also must realize that children are their own people. In other words, you know, they have our own beliefs and they have their own characters and so on. And all you can do as a parent is to try and imbue those set of values of respect, of, you know, integrity, of making sure that they understand that they don't live in an island, they live with other people. But at the same time, understand that they can be the best that they can be.
Did your parents ever say to you, "Sizwe, you can forget whatever lessons we've taught you, but promise you will never forget this"?
I was very fortunate as a young person to grow in a family that really respected family values, those values that have stood me until today that I live by. And when you look at just especially my mother, you know, she was a very strong Zulu woman who made sure that she did the best for her children, especially when it comes to education, but also liberating us in the process. So from a very young age, there were certain rituals that our family did. For instance, you know, my mother at the age of about 7 or 8 would make sure that she was sent to town on her own. and go and do some chores, because this is about making sure that you were ready for the world, you could navigate the world. And that's why most of us as siblings, for instance, would have gone to boarding school when we were in high school, because that prepared you for independence, for navigating the world and making sure that you could make decisions and take responsibility for those decisions by yourself.
Please tell me about the person that believed in you and your potential as a young man. A person you can look at and say, because of you, my life and career is better.
If you're a parent, and in fact it doesn't matter whether it's your own children or not, and because you could be an aunt, you could be an uncle to someone, it is absolutely important to imbue a sense of responsibility to young people that we mentor. We're all mentors in one way or the other. And just for me, one of the things that happened in my very young life was that, you know, my father was a school teacher and my mother was a nurse, imbued this sense of responsibility in us as young children. And one of the things that, for instance, our parents did was to sort of tell us at a very young age that we could be anything that we wanted to become. That's why even today, you know, I have not stayed in one industry. I've been in accounting and auditing. After that, I was in telecoms. I was in banking. And I'm now in education, because all of us, I guess, given what we get told as young people, can navigate the world, especially the world which is dynamic, which is changing, and make a contribution to that.
What is the title of the book you would pass on to your mentee and why?
One question, if I had to give a book to a mentee, what would be the title of the book? I think the title of the book would be The Road Less Traveled. And, you know, I take this from a poem by Kit McCallum, which says, you know, sometimes the most difficult choices are the very ones that can bring us the greatest rewards. What I really like about this poem, The Road Less Traveled, is that, you know, it talks about the fact that all of us have different stories and experiences. And very often, when we are at a crossroads and we are faced with a decision, particularly a difficult decision, the urge is sometimes to take the most comfortable path, the road with the least resistance and the shortest or most troubled route. Whereas maybe we should ponder and reflect on our experiences and actually take the most difficult decisions, because very often the most difficult decisions may open new pathways, may, you know, open new possibilities for us. And sometimes, you know, we all want to just do the ordinary. We all just want to be like the next person, whereas we could be extraordinary. And we are all destined for greatness. And depending on how we think about things and how we pursue our own dreams.
What is your biggest fear?
What is my biggest fear? Well, actually, my biggest fear is the fear of failure. I've actually failed a couple of times. For instance, you know, I failed my CA exam to become a qualified chartered accountant a couple of times. I've had some businesses that have failed. But, you know, it's not so much about the failure as such, but it is about how one pulls oneself up by their bootstraps and actually how you rise up after you have tripped and fallen down. But, you know, every day I wake up and I do what I do, especially now in the education space, because, you know, I want to succeed. I want others to succeed. I want at least to make a small contribution in making the world a better place than what I found.
What does contentment mean to you? What does success mean to you?
What does success mean to me? Success to me means one, you've got a dream, and if you are able to achieve your dreams, well, no matter what they are, that is success. This is about pursuing your goals and just going for it, and in spite of everything that may come your way, being able to stand back and say, you know, I did it. I did it despite, in spite of all the problems and the challenges that I face. And all of us have that within us.
In my opinion, there is no better legacy than building schools. Please tell me about the moment when you thought, that's it. Future Nation Schools has to come to fruition yesterday.
The objective of Future Nation Schools is to prepare our students for the 21st century, or what I would call the fourth industrial revolution. One of the things that we focus on is to make sure that we build resilience in our students, that they're exposed to technology, that they are also very grounded in who they are. In other words, you know, we teach African studies, we teach coding, we teach entrepreneurship and leadership, which are all important because, you know, today the environment is very different. It doesn't only require students to understand their academic content, but also it is important for students to be prepared for what is going to happen in their lives, because as we know, the life is very different today than it was in the olden days.
You are chairman of the NSFAS. In your opinion, is free quality education feasible?
As the chairman of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, you ask the question, is free quality education feasible? I think free quality education is feasible, especially for the poor. And already, as chairman of the Ministerial Staff Team, that's looking at how we can make it possible for poor or students that come from humble backgrounds or working class backgrounds to receive good quality higher education, but, you know, that is fully subsidized. We've been able to come up with a concept. It's now being piloted at 7 universities. That demonstrate that it is possible, just given the resources that are available from both the public sector and the private sector, to provide not only financial assistance, but also support to students to make sure that they are set up to succeed, that they improve their employability. In other words, the ability to participate in the economy when they finish and graduate.
As gloomy as this sounds, what would you like written on your tombstone?
What would I like to be written on my tombstone? Well, that's a very interesting question. You know, for me, it really would be, I really played my role and I lived my life as best as I could, whilst at the same time I cared for others, and always try and do that. But, you know, I guess it will be up to the people who remain to decide what they put on my tombstone.
What is your favorite Madiba quote?
My most favorite quote from Madiba is the one that says, "It always seems impossible until it's done." I think it captures just the essence of life, that, you know, very often there are a lot of things that may seem difficult, may seem impossible even. But if we just set our minds and our energies to accomplish those things, they can actually be done. And I really believe that, you know, that is about life. It is about how we should be looking at life and how we should be pursuing our dreams to achieve whatever it is that we want to achieve.
One thing that is clear after listening to Dr. Judy and Ntate Sizwe is that family is the most important thing in their lives. Their attitude to selfless giving and contribution in society is tremendous. Moreover, they epitomize and reflect the notion of ubuntu, botho, humanity. Giving back goes beyond handouts. The aim is to inspire others, instill a sense of self-sustenance, give hope, and to encourage positive thinking. There are many phenomenal men and women that understand and value the importance of giving back. I came across a tweet this morning from the Twitter handle Ann Knowledge, and they tweeted, "Roger Federer has spent $13.5 million to build 81 preschools in Malawi." This was followed by these comments, quote, "Show me one African who would do this," end quote. Well, let me tell you about a few Africans doing extraordinary things. Strive Masiyiwa, who is executive chairman of Econnect Wireless, is one of Africa's most generous philanthropists. His charitable foundation, the Kapanoom Trust, which he runs in partnership with his wife, pays the school fees of over 22,000 Zimbabwean orphans. Mama Grasa Michelle is a founding member of The Elders. She works to improve the lives of children placing orphans in village homes, studying the impact of armed conflict on children, and helping to rehabilitate children back into families. She has received a humanitarian award from Interaction and an award from CARE for her philanthropic work. Mo Ibrahim, who is Sudanese, I believe, is involved in helping the African continent by investing in various businesses and engaging in philanthropy. He established the Mo Ibrahim Foundation in 2007 to promote good governance. It resolves to grant the amount of $5 million to heads of state in the continent who have been deemed worthy of the Mo Ibrahim Prize for Achievement in African Leadership. Another comment read, "Where is Millionaire Bushiri?" I think this person was referring to Prophet Bushiri, who is from Malawi. Now, that is a good question indeed, considering that Prophet Bushiri is infamous for opulence and extravagance. Just Google his name and then you'll understand why I'm making such a comment. Oprah Winfrey has donated millions of dollars to various charities and organizations, with most of her money going to three foundations. The first one being the Angel Network, which benefits the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls in South Africa. The second one is the Oprah Winfrey Foundation, and the third being the Oprah Winfrey Operating Foundation. Melinda Gates, who co-chairs Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, her investments in programs promoting maternal and child health has opened countless doors for advocates working across the globe in this arena. She has invested billions of dollars into promoting women's reproductive health through the foundation. But then, of course, you know, giving back or philanthropy, you know, a lot of people make a mistake of thinking that, you know, giving back is all about, you know, monetary funds or monetary trusts, or, you know, giving out, dishing out money to whatever cause that you feel that the mandates and the agendas that they're pushing, that's not the only way. Fact is, even an hour of your time at a local library, if you have the time, which I'm sure, you know, all of us do have, I mean, 67 minutes is all that is asked of you today on Mandela Day. But the foundation, I was listening this morning to an interview that one of the organizers for today from the Nelson Mandela Foundation, they were sending out the message out there that, you know, it's not only today that people have to consider giving out their time or, you know, donating funds where needed, or giving out a helping hand where it's needed. For example, go to your local library on a Saturday morning, and if you can't find kids there who have, you know, struggles with reading, you can pick out a book and gather a few kids around you and read for them. So, you know, making the excuse that you cannot give because you don't have money, or you cannot give because you know the word philanthropy is beyond you, or you feel that you can only give if you have millions of rands, millions of dollars, or billions of dollars. It's not about money. Time, actually, at the end of the day, is really what the other person just could be needing from you. Allow me to share this Indian Cree prophecy. Only after the last tree has been cut down, only after the last river has been poisoned, only after the last fish has been caught, only then will you find that money cannot be eaten. Now, my question to you is, how are you going to spend your Mandela Day today? It is an international day, after all. What will your 67-minute contribution be? I did my last bit Friday, and as we all know, every bit counts. We were at the Sandton Convention Center. We were invited by a big corporate company. I was with the likes of Jennifer Bala. I was with Lucas Khadebe, and my husband was there as well. And we spent a good 2 hours packing food parcels. You know, you had various stations. I mean, it is properly run. It is run like you know, a factory like you won't believe. Also, you know, various corporates and organizations had different time slots from the morning, the entire day on Friday. And what we did was that each station had, you know, one particular station. I know where my husband was situated. He would pour a cup full of rice into this clear plastic bag, and then on to the next person for a cup full of lentils, and then the other person would be filling in a cup full of beans, and then the other person a cup full of savory mince, and then it would come to me, and then we need to seal this. And then the next person in this case was Lucas Khadebe. He would put in the instructions. You know, he would paste the instructions onto the packet, and then it goes on into the box. And I'm not sure of the numbers of how many of these meal packs that we packed, but I'm of the belief that those meal packs, the boxes that we ended up packing per station, millions and millions of kids are going to be fed, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's not a lot, giving up 2 hours of your time compared to, you know, what the likes of Utata Madiba had to endure, the number of years that he spent in prison, you know, in incarceration. The 2 hours that you spend, or the 67 minutes that you spend, is nothing compared to, you know, what you know, the long walk to freedom, as it's called, as one of the titles of Utata Madiba's books was on about, is that, you know, it's the least you can do, and you cannot complain. I mean, 67 minutes is just over an hour, really. You know, so now I need to give my heartfelt gratitude to you, Dr. Judy, and Dr. Sizwe. Your time and efforts are highly appreciated. I don't need to wish you luck for your exam tomorrow, Dr. Judy, because I know that you're going to ace it. My humble opinion, one thing is for sure, you create a legacy either way. Your actions and inactions are your legacy. And President Jacob Zuma has a legacy. Former President Thabo Mbeki has a legacy. You do good, that's your legacy. You do bad, that's your legacy. Legacy is what people will say about you at your memorial or burial. What legacy are you creating? Are you going to leave an indelible mark? Ask yourself, how will I be remembered? You know, over the weekend, I came across a newspaper article by Priga Govender, and it states more than 500,000 South African children are not going to school. 9% of them because they feel education is a waste of time. Now, I'm touching on this because one cannot talk about creating a legacy without mentioning education. And I just thought I should, you know, just read out a paragraph from this article because it is something that, you know, we all need to have a conversation about. It is something that everybody who's passionate about education has to think about and has to be aware of. The report said, as a society, it is concerning that there was quite a high proportion of out-of-school learners who stated that the reason for not attending school is because they regard education as being useless. You heard that right. I mean, this is concerning, not only as a mother, but as somebody who's also concerned about the state of education in this country. This is a crisis of humongous proportions. Something needs to be done about this. Can we get this conversation going? Can pressure be put onto the right departments, the education department, the department of, you know, a basic education? Let's get our house in order. Come on. Aspire to inspire before you expire.
This is CliffCentral.com.